Welcome to the Food Freedom Habit Podcast, where you can find freedom from food crazies using nothing but your own brain. With me, Lydia, the lifestyle coach. Would you like permanent food and body peace without tracking one trigger or calorie? Whether you're dealing with overeating, binge eating, bulimia, food obsession, body hate, or the endless diet cycle? We do all this without delving into past trauma, starting yet another food plan, or monitoring every meal. Live a free life aligned with your health and values. If you're ready for something real, you're in the right place. All episodes are 100% free, so please subscribe to and review our podcast.
Hi guys, this is Lydia, the lifestyle coach, and so excited to come with another interview today. And what we usually do and still continue to do is end eating disorders using nothing but your brain. And you guys have seen a lot about that. But the cool thing that happens is that ending eating disorders are very much something that, I mean, everyone in every walk of life struggles with, but women in particular, because of the way that society is, end up struggling with eating disorders. The number one cause of eating disorders is restrictive dieting, which is very much a problem that is targeted at women. And when we talk about that and go upstream, we really see that it's about an inequality and it's about sexism and it's about a lack of diversity in bodies and otherwise. And so we have a really cool treat for you today. And we're going to be talking about more of those upstream topics and something very close to my heart. And we're going to talk about diversity, specifically racial diversity, specifically being an Asian woman. And if you guys haven't noticed, I am a slightly Asian woman. I'm half Asian, I'm half Chinese. And it was a very interesting experience growing up that I haven't touched on a lot. And I know there's been a big request. I know a lot of you have asked, you know, especially those of you who have had a similar experience growing up of like, you know, with, you know, racial acceptance of yourself and body and race and all of that, you know, people have, you know, asked my own experience. And so finally sharing it with you today, along with another amazing woman who is Roran Xu. I may or may not have said that right, but I did my best. And she is just another powerhouse business owner, boss lady, wonderful person, and really excited to have the discussion with her as well. So I would like to welcome on the show, Roran. Hello. So fun
hello.
To see you here.
So good to see you. And yes, you did do it right. Yay.
Yes. Oh, I love doing things right. Wonderful. So you guys, Roran is an awesome woman and I'm really excited for you to get to know her. And we're going to just have a conversation about the experience of being women, of being Asian women, of being in this world and our experience. And would love to hear any of your comments below of like, if this has been your experience or how is yours different or the same or what are your thoughts? So first I want to you guys to get to know her a little bit because you know me. If you don't know me, there are 500 videos that you can get to know me. So we won't touch on that for too long. But Roran, tell us a little bit about you just as a human in the world, what you do and all that jazz.
Cool. So my name is Roran. I'm the owner of C3 Nami. We're a digital marketing agency based out of Austin. And we specialize in helping businesses be confident about being posting consistently that represents their brand and building the community that they want. And a lot of that stemmed from my personal passion, which is helping people unapologetically live their authentic selves and just be in that space. And so other parts of me, I am Chinese. We had to do a DNA test to figure that out because it was like my mom was adopted. And so we were like, I'm either the mutt of all the things because people can never figure me out, or I'm actually just like 100% Chinese. And so I am on that after doing DNA testing. And I was originally born in China, came here when I was 3, and am a natural Austin native, which is a unicorn. If you have ever been to Austin before, a lot of people moving in. And I am engaged to my fiance and we're getting married in September. And so, which is not far off. And then we have a dog, some named Freddie. So that's a little bit about my life.
Beautiful. Yeah. And congratulations, by the way. So excited for you and all of that
almost
stuff.
Almost there. I'm like, can it be done now?
Yeah, it's a lot of planning. It's a lot to do, but yeah. So fun. And so like you guys know a little bit about, you know, what I do. You know, I own Life with Lydia. We're about ending eating disorders, changing the world. So both Roran and I are doing like big, important things in the world. And we have this background that has very much been informed by just racial ideas and our own identities. And so what we're going to launch into is just, and this is not representing anyone else but ourselves, but this is just like more stories out there about what really it's like to be in a world as an Asian person. And so we're going to talk a little bit about like what it was like, you know, growing up, you know, being Asian, like what, you know, that consisted of, and just, you know, some high points of how that really colored like what our experience was. So Roran, you want to go ahead and start out and tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up Asian?
Yeah. So, okay. Let me like long story short, this into a large, big point is, a lot. So let me kind of put some context of what we're talking about when we talk about growing up with a specific identity and how society views race and things like that and how it shifted into 2019. Because if we talk to like a young, bubbling, under high school or college person in 2019, they're like, oh, this is the norm. This is the flow. I don't see color or things like that. A lot of, if you look at children, they don't see color unless they're being told prejudices. And that's just like how we go. In our world, in my upbringing, when I entered the United States at 3 years old, I'm a full U.S. citizen now, but when I was first immigrated over, China was isolated. China was a third world country. Fast forward to 2019, China is now one of the biggest superpowers. So my journey of someone that immigrated into the U.S. is very radically different than someone that is currently entering the U.S. today from China. And it's because a power struggle. At the end of the day, everything that boils down to identity and politics, like the politics around identity and how people react, is power. And so when you come from a country that had no power, and in order to fully assimilate into the current country that you live in, you lose a lot of the cultural things. Like, I remember growing up as a kid, not bringing my lunch to school. Like, I'm a foodie. I love me some good Asian food, but I got to a point that I begged my mom that if I could just have regular cafeteria food, which is horrible food in the hindsight of things, but like having that so I could belong. And so, and then fast forward to 2019, you're kind of watching like more media and Asian people. So you got Crazy Rich Asians, you have the show Fresh Off the Boat. And it's really, a lot of that is depicted in those media. Is like what I grew up with. But it's, if you talk to someone that recently immigrated today, they're like, oh, I have never experienced any of this. And it's just because of that culture play. So just like fun, interesting parts of it.
Yeah, and appreciate like all, like Roran is very educated in like the facts and the years and the stats and the culture stuff. And that was, and you guys will see, like not on my radar at all growing up. So I just love the diversity of like our experience and like knowledge as well. So thank you.
Yeah. I wanted to like put some context of just like seeing where people like are experiencing today. Cause like what I experience, or if you talk to me versus if you talk to someone else, they might have very polarizing. And I want to acknowledge that everybody is going to have a very, like how different of a journey that is. What I found interesting is growing up Asian is, and especially because I had to assimilate so much. There is a saying of being whitewashed in our, and especially in my generation of immigrants, because we assimilated to the point that we don't speak Chinese, we don't, or the language of our birth, we don't know how to use chopsticks. Our parents worry significantly if we go back to our home country by ourselves, kind of thing. That is totally a thing. And then when you're in China, like when I go back to China, because I dress American, I act American. I am not there. I actually grew up with a Taiwanese family. So my Chinese is two Taiwanese for mainland China people, but then two mainland, like traditional mainland Chinese for Taiwanese people. So I don't like, I just like never belonged in any of the check boxes growing up. And so for me personally, and why my passion is about unapologetic living authentically you is because I grew up being labeled a rebel because I never belonged fully into a group and I always flowed. give or take, helpful on the mental side of things growing up as a teenager, figuring out who you are. But it was that journey is who I am today. And I'm like, no, I'm just uniquely me. I'm all these different facets. And actually, because I'm this, I'm a niche in such a competitive field that I am today, and how I bring forward into doing my business and things like that. So that's like the long epicenter of journey of explanation of my experience in High Points. So yeah.
Yeah. Love it. Thank you so much for sharing. And so, you know, Rowan and I had pretty different experiences, you know, growing up. So I am half Chinese and I'm half like European, you know, all of that, you know, I had on the white side of my family, just ancestors that were like founding fathers. So like we've been like here for a while, right? On the white side of my family. And so with growing up, I grew up with the white side of my family. I didn't actually get to know my dad, which is the Chinese side of me, until I was an adult. So I had an interesting experience, and I grew up in a very white, like very predominantly white area of the United States. And I felt white. I mean, I was, that was my culture, that like my family, you know, that side of them, you know, was white. Like everyone I went to school with was white. So there was absolutely nothing about me culturally, experience-wise, that was Chinese at all. And so one difficult thing growing up is that I still read as Asian. And especially with being in a white population, nobody could see that I was half white. Everyone just saw me as Asian completely. And so it was very frustrating and sad for me growing up that I was never judged for how I felt, but how I looked. And that was a difficult thing. I mean, and I didn't, besides my brother, I didn't meet another Asian person in real life until I was in high school. Like this was just like how incredibly like surrounded by white people I was. And so I picked up on it very, very early in life that, you know, what racism was, right? You know, like people treating you differently for only because of the way that you look. And if I could have had one wish in my life growing up, it would have been to be white. Just all the way white. Like I hated being Asian. It was very, I look back on that now and it's like so sad, right? Mm-hmm. But it was just like such a difficult thing because of the way that I was treated. And when everyone around you is racist against you, then that racism becomes internalized where you're racist against yourself.
Oh yeah. And then like imperialism is a thing too. Imperialism is totally a thing, like lighter skin, lighter things. Like we can talk forever about beauty standards in general as well. But definitely like I think, so I grew up also in a predominantly white. My mom very strategically placed me in white schools. Like I grew up in, and the only times I was, my saving grace is that while my mom put me in those schools because she wanted me to have the best like education and experience, and like there's so like a lot of like the racial segregation of income and stuff like that does come into play at that point.
Yeah.
But she put me in really good schools that happened to be majority white. I graduated where I was like the token Asian. And like, there's like 10 of us in our graduating class in high school, or like some really low number.
Yeah.
And so while I had that, my mother wanted me to travel the world and experience different cultures. So not only did I go back into Asia, I also went into Europe and I did all these different countries. And it was the whole entire time that I traveled though, I was labeled as an American. And so even though when I'm in America, I was labeled as Asian, and I definitely get you, like growing up, I think like in elementary into middle school, I was very much, I had moments like you where I was like, oh man, I wish I was white just so I could fit in and not be judged and not have people look at me weird or get like weird ideas. I mean,
yeah, because I felt like no one could ever see who I was because they couldn't see past how I was reading racially. Like a couple of examples, and maybe you experience this as well, is like, you know, I worked super hard in school. I mean, all throughout school, all throughout college, you know, like top of my class. And I knew it was because of how hard I worked. But any time that it would be like, oh, Lydia got the top score, audibly out loud, people would say, oh, well, you're Asian. Mm-hmm. It was completely attributed to my race. I remember I got an award in theater once, mm-hmm. and the guy next to me turned, he's like, well, you know why they gave you that award, right? Because you're Asian. Like, it was always like nothing could be credited to me because of that. Yeah, absolutely. And I know that just a couple of experiences that have been in my mind about, you know, growing up that way is, you know, the number one question, Warren, that I got, like the number one question from everyone I ever interacted with school. I knew a new school year was starting, is everyone would ask me, what are you? That was the very first thing that anyone would ask me.
Right. So like there's the, okay. So let's spill some tea a little bit on these questions of how people ask these things. So there's the, what are you question. And then there's the, oh, so where are you from? No, where are you really from? Like, I get that. Yep. And I was like, excuse me? Like, so, and I had a debate with my fiance because he's very rational. He doesn't think racial, like, he was just like very curious on why I was feeling so emotional about that. And I explained, is like, when you say, where are you from? But where are you? So if I say, where are you from? And then you say, well, I'm from in somewhere, a city in the United States. And they're like, but where are you really from? From is a sense of belonging. Like the way the language is being used is that. But what you're really trying to ask me is like, okay, what is your cultural background? Like, yes, that sounds super academic. And yes, like that's a thing. But it takes away the vagueness of the word from. Because if you said that to me, it's instantaneously making me feel like that you don't think I belong in this room next to you. Like there's that sub connotation, even though by just like pure curiosity, that person might just be like really genuinely curious and want to like know the culture and stuff like that. Now, if they follow up with be like, oh yeah, I like fortune cookies, then I might really arch my eyebrow really high.
My generation, it was read my shirt because those kanji shirts were suck. It's like, what are you? Oh, what does my shirt say? You know what I mean? It's just like, and again, like I was trying so hard to separate myself from being Asian. Like it was really difficult for me to just be consistently defined first and foremost by only that. And I think you bring up such a great point of like the, you know, what are you, where are you from? It's very much a sense of like, well, you don't belong, right? It's like, no, but really, really, how can I think about you? Yeah. And I would play with this question, right? I'd be like, California. And then I would just like, period. And then and then again, no, but where are you from? Like, what are you?
Right.
Yeah. So that was always the first question. You know, my mom is white. And so, you know, she would come to school to pick me up. People would be like, oh, who's that? And I'd be like, oh, it's my mom. And they'll be like, no, it's not.
It's like, it's crazy.
This was like the constant thing because, you know, and these were just little kids, right? You know, I was like in elementary school, I was in middle school, but I could very much see like the coloring of where their parents,
ideologies passed on to their kids. Right. And then like now, if you were to like go and look at the, like when we were, so like 8 to 10 years old, like they just, it doesn't even phase them. I think that has a lot to do with that. We're in such a digital age. Like, it used to be, so I use Austin example. So growing up in Austin, Texas, like it was a sleepy college town, let's be real. Yes, it was the capital of Texas, but it was not that big. And so whenever I traveled growing and I would come back, I would feel really restricted because I didn't see diverse cultures and languages and sounds. So if I heard anyone with a different accent that is not Texan, my ears perk up and I'm like, hello, human, can I get to know you? Like, give me a taste of culture. And fast forward now, I've flipped to being the unicorn native Austinite. Like, that's just mind-boggling. And so to put, like, to the reason why I point that out is, like, with back in the day, like, people just didn't know better. Like, they didn't see better. They didn't see the diversity. And now when you have this digital age where you could literally be talking to someone in, like, in a totally different time zone, 13 hours away, and just have an easy conversation, and then also boiling it down to where that conversation is in a forum behind a username and you actually don't even know that person's race, you can have really intense conversations. So like, that's why I always say social media is the reflection of human nature on steroids, the good and the bad. The algorithm just likes to push a lot of drama up because we are obsessed over drama.
Yeah.
So that's what it is. And I definitely think that to like my friends who never like met someone of a different culture or something like that, like they were just genuinely curious and they didn't know. And I think shame has to have a say. I think like it's the intention. So if someone came to me and said, what are you or where are you really from? Yes, I could get really sassy and go for it. Or I can be like, oh, you mean like where my cultural background is, and then see how they respond. And it was my way of like correcting them and guiding them so they don't piss off another person again, but with compassion. And then most of the time when I say that, they like instantaneously realize where they messed up and they're like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, no, it's totally cool. Like language is a thing. And I'm so happy that you're receptive to my feedback. And so like that compassion and vulnerability is like super key of just like, but definitely when I was younger, 100% sass was thrown. And then now I'm
like, you're not equipped when you're like a 10-year-old kid to like know that. Like it's, and I'm so glad that we're doing this because I think it's important to get those tools out in the world. If you're just coming with that compassion of like, oh, okay, you know, like language is a thing and being able to have that conversation. But as a kid, a lot of times you feel like the lack of belonging, right? You feel the messages of like, oh, what you are is not okay. And when you talk about, you know, the digital age, like I think that is so important because nowadays, like you can find anyone who looks like you on YouTube and be able to be exposed to that, which is wonderful. I mean, of course, there's representation in Hollywood and that's a whole other conversation.
Yes.
But we have access to that because I remember growing up and like the only thing that you had is magazines, right?
Right.
And I remember flipping through 17 magazine and wanting, you know, like being a young teenager and wanting to be able to like fit in and look pretty and just flipping through, not to even speak of all the lack of body diversity, but there was no one that looked like me. Mm-hmm. These sort of the makeup tutorials were for eyes that were not shaped like mine. Mm-hmm. Even like the token, you know, black models that were there every once in a while looked like the white models. I remember noticing this when I was a kid of like, they don't have any African-American features. Like they just look like white models that have darker skin.
Right.
So not being able to see any of that representation was just more of like the, you know, not okay. Yeah. And it's interesting to see just,
that, you know, can I add in on that? Is that when I had that same feeling too, right? Mm-hmm. I got fat shamed in China because, okay, let's be real. Asian people are brutally honest. Like the Asian grandmas and aunties, like every single time, it doesn't matter if you're skinny, tall, like any physical shape, it's sexism plays in. So like with females, they'll look at you and be like, oh, they either say you're too skinny or you're too fat. And then regardless of how they say it, they still feed you food. with the guys, they say like, you're too skinny, eat more. Like, it's hilarious how much they push the eat more perspective. But they're just, it's not just like my grandma or my aunt, or it's like the random Asian lady that's down the street. Like, that is the first words out of their mouth. And they are just brutally honest about that. So like, from a beauty standard perspective, like I would look at 17 magazine and not find anything. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. I'm used to it. Whenever I went back to Asia, I was like, let me go look at the Asian magazines, the Asian dramas, and look at all these things. And I'm like, I am not a twig and I can't fit into either that perspective either. I'm 5'8", so really tall in Asian standards. And my mom has boobs and I have boobs. like I am curvaceous naturally. And so it's like, okay, I can't buy clothes in China, period, just because of my height. So like there's all those things. And so when you're in that realm, you're just like, well, I'm just isolated. I did get a saving grace of like seeing a little bit more diversity in European magazines, just because that has been, those are like epicenters of just where everyone accumulates in. And so you see a little bit more. But like growing up as a kid is just kind of like, well, I fit none. I'm just going to be a tomboy then. Call it a day. That was my growing up perspective.
Yep. Yeah.
And, you know, and being able to, like, you know, like you said, like in European, you know, like media, you know, anywhere where we have more of a diversity and we have more people that look like more things, it's really good for the world because we can have this feeling of like, oh, okay, like belonging and representation, because it's not just like, is it fair? It's anytime that we look around and we see nothing that is like us, it is this message of you're not okay. We see this with, you know, body diversity all the time. If you are a certain size and not one female body that is praised is close to what that looks like, and there's only one thing that is praised, it's a really strong social message of you have to do whatever it takes, even if it's extremely dangerous, to change yourself. And it's, you know, very much the same feeling with racial diversity, right? It's like, mm-hmm. I want to do anything that I could to be more white. And that's such a sadness, right? Because I am, like you said, you know, like uniquely and me.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how strong these ideas are, you know, especially reflected through kids, you know, that are coming from their parents. So I remember I had a really good friend in elementary school, and we were friends and we'd always play on the playground. And one day he just came and he's like, hey, I'm not going to be friends with you anymore because my dad says I can't be friends with anybody who's black. And I'm like,
in what shade?
I know. I was like so curious and like sort of sad as a little kid, because this is like my friend. Like we've been hanging out for like all the school year. And he's like, well, I'm like, but I'm not black. And he's like, yeah, but if you're not white, you're black. And these sort of ideas are just like, yeah, like it's the world has come a long way, but really to examine the language and examine, because, you know, this kid, like he's a little kid, and but those ideas are going to perpetuate if he's not exposed to something else, you know, throughout his life. So yeah.
Yeah. Exposure is huge, like just so huge in how people can engage and react. And like the digital age has definitely like shifted a lot of, like allowing diversity and allowing different things. Social gets a bad rep for like trends. So there is, and like I said, it is the good and the bad heightened on steroids of humanity. So there was like a recent trend on Douyin, which is TikTok equivalent in China, where you fit, like in China, they fit your waist is your size, is the waist of your size, or sorry, the size of your waist, words, size of your waist smaller than a normal A4 printing paper, like piece of paper. Like, and whoa. That's, yeah, and that was like the trend. And then it was like, how can you put like your arm behind? Can you fit it like a 500 yen or a 5 yen around your wrist and stuff like that? And that was like the trendy thing. And I'm like, whoa, like what like, and those are the things that went viral. And like other things that, and that's like, it's beautiful that you see exposure, but it doesn't serve it if that's what the Western side sees if they go look at viral videos on about Eastern culture. Like that's not, that doesn't serve. The other thing that like pops into my brain is like the crazy makeup transformations of beauty products that come out of Asia, like the nose structure and things like that. But here's the interesting thing. The nose, the splitting of the chin, circle lenses, eyelid tape is all designed to reflect Eastern and European facial structure.
Yeah.
So, and that goes back into imperialism. It's power play, right? So like when you mm-hmm. had like Great Britain literally take over, like just, I think, I can't remember how many are in the Commonwealth, like 50, at least 50 different countries. And that's the standard because of power. So it's not just like the media and what we see in like 17 magazine and stuff like that growing up. It's like that is perpetuated across. What I've been personally loving is watching now, like mod cloth is like body positive, have all different sizes, all different shapes. I really loved like the Aerie campaign. Like you see a lot in like women lingerie is like a huge thing. And so what happens is it's like, these are large US brands and there are like high luxury equivalent. Like that's what like Chinese people seek. Like brands and wearing brands is very much a thing in China. And so like what is decided here is going to be reflected and intaked on there. So it's very interesting watching how like the media, because the digital age is so interconnected, like how one ripple effect in the US can reflect over there. Like right now, if we're just talking about identity and female and like identity standards, like the one of the top late night hosts is a trans woman in China, which you're like, that doesn't exist in the US. So like China's like, we're just gonna take it to the next level and go that way.
Yeah.
So like that's like the interesting things that you see. And so I'd be very curious, because racial diversity and like being able to have that conversation and exposure is so huge, like how that will shift the dialogue. Like I would love it if that, like the next generation, that they don't experience the, like this black and white feeling that we experienced as intensely. Yeah.
And so let's talk about Roran on like a individual and then like a social level, right? Because, you know, there's a lot of great things that have happened and there's still a lot of just really messed up stuff that, you know, we're exposed to. And, but we are the people who get to put the ideas out there, you know, like everyone has a voice more today than ever before in the world. Like literally everyone listening to this, you guys all have a voice. Right. And, you know, what would you say has personally helped you to move into a place of like acceptance and like, you know, with race and with, you know, all the different things that come into that, you know, from where you grew up? And then what would you say would be your advice on like a social level, a social media level, or like a societal level of what people can do to spread better ideas and to increase racial diversity and acceptance?
Right. So I definitely think love, like I loved the pride, like the theme of World Pride this year was just like, you gotta have love. And I'm like, that's so much needed. It sounds a little like on the hippie woo side, but it's like, no, like love and compassion, because mentally speaking, we go from the scarcity mindset of like, how much can I eat and take up of a pie, to a abundance mindset of how can I share and grow? So like, that's just like the mental deep foundational shift. But as RuPaul says, if you can't love yourself, how the hell are you gonna love anybody else, as the saying goes, right?
Yeah.
So like my personal narrative is that I lost so much of who I am as an identity that when I was 14 to 16 years old, I had thoughts of suicide. Like I just didn't fit anywhere, period. Like I didn't fit as a female because I was a tomboy in a very highly feminine like mindset in China of like what you're supposed to be as a woman. So I didn't match that. I didn't match being Asian in general, as we talked about. And I also didn't match in like what my sexual preference was. I was bisexual. I liked women and men. And so like I didn't match on anything. And growing out of that, if I were like, it's been exactly 10 years since those, like I was like survived through that phase of my life as a suicide survivor. And I would say, if I were to say to that little person there, is like, you're uniquely you, like you're perfectly you. I had this, it was like the first mental barrier that I broke out of, which is that perfectionism doesn't exist. So like all these beauty standards that we're talking about is creating the perfect image based on whatever people call it, right? Or like society, organization, or whatever culture that you are currently living in. And the reality is that that doesn't exist. Like it's what you see and what you look up to, like that perfect person that you look up to, if you really actually look at them, they're not perfect. They're just themselves. They're confidently and happily, authentically themselves in all the iterations that make them unique. So I had this saying that came into my brain, which is I'm imperfectly me. And that means I'm perfectly me. So imperfectly me breaks down to I'm perfectly me, the good and the bad. And that was like one of the things that like started my journey of just like self-love and self-abundance, to take myself out of that scarcity mentality. So that need to throw sass and be defensive when someone asks me who are like, but really who are you or where are you really from, to being compassionate and abundance and being like, no, you're not really attacking me. You just didn't know better, kind of thing. And that leans back into love. It's like, instead of assuming the worst out of that person, give them a chance to learn to be more educated and again, more exposure of what we're talking about. So
yeah.
winded.
So good. So good. I love it, Roar. And that's really beautiful. And I think that, you know, creating that energy in the world, you know, seeing injustice and, you know, being angry is something that, you know, definitely has its place and gets us into action. And the sustainable, you know, really world changing thing, I think all comes back to like that love and compassion and that understanding, right? And so, you know, what I would say to speak to that is, I think that on my own personal journey, one thing that was just a really big deal for me is so interesting because you said the same perfectionism thing, but, you know, with coming from an eating disorder, you know, always trying to manipulate my body to be thin enough to be acceptable, really. I mean, and in a society where the structure, the patriarchal, you know, structure of the society says like, this is what you have to be. This is the only thing that's acceptable. And so trying so hard in my life to be thin enough, you know, to be white enough. And it was extremely liberating to realize that there was no amount of manipulation of trying to change who I was that would allow me to win. And it's completely understandable to want more privilege. It's understandable to want to be treated better, to have equal pay. I mean, all of those things are understandable. But in the structure that we are in right now, you cannot win because the structure is set up for only one kind of person to win, which most people cannot be, right? Most of us cannot be male and white enough to win in that structure. So when you take yourself out of that game and when you stop trying to win enough points in this structure and you do your own thing, it's like, I mean, that's one thing. It's like with corporate America, there's some really good stuff and there's some really bad stuff going on there. But my ability to win and change the world how I wanted to much easily works when I own my own business.
Agreed. Amen.
Amen.
Yes. Now, that doesn't...
Female entrepreneurs, because it's like, okay, we have an amazing thing. And so we don't play in that system. We make our own.
Right. And I also want to point out, like, in the realm, side note of entrepreneurism is that just because you want, like, the current large, big, in building Big Brother system doesn't serve you, does not mean that, but like, if you naturally don't want to be an entrepreneur and that's just not in your core, like, being an entrepreneur is like you see a gap in your industry and you're just like, I gotta fix it. Like that's like, and I'm gonna throw caution to the wind and like dive in and that thing's gonna fuel you. But entrepreneur,
not for everyone.
Well, not for everyone. Yeah. But though, for those people that still want that change, find women owned or like diversity owned or like the people, again, culture values, right? So that has that passion and value to be like, we just like, so we were talking earlier of like, well, I have a super diverse team, everything from different LGBTs all the way to race, Jewish, like different things, and women owned. And they're like, wow, how did you do this? And I was like, I just hired happy humans. You just hired happy humans that align to me. I have an awesome team that really didn't want like what was existing in corporate America, but wanted to be in support of a larger mission. Like that is why you see super large, like these like powerful companies come into light that shift the way that we're looking at how we do business in the world, is that you get like-minded people together on the same value system. And if we get enough of those, the rest of the world will change on its own. But instead of like trying to like be and fit into a box, instead, figure out and flow what matches to you. I think that is like
beautifully, beautifully put. And I think it is easier in our day and age to find your tribe and find people in a structure that you can thrive and win than ever before. Because, you know, for me to go back and convince the, you know, racist kids that were just influenced by their parents, right? But it's like, and influenced by their parents, you know, that's not where I'm going to win, to try to convince them all that, like, you know, I'm a person, you know, besides my race. So I go where that works, right? It's like, there will never be an amount of thin enough that I could be able to be at peace and myself and, you know, have all of that privilege. So you know what, I'm going to operate outside of that. And I'm going to, you know, decide that that's not the structure that serves me. And I don't want to try to live to be thin enough. I want to be myself and thrive there, right? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because a lot of times we'll have chatter in our heads about like, you know, oh, well, I'm
you've spent so much energy trying to gain privilege in a system where you're not going to win that it's almost like feeling like giving up because you've already invested so much in trying to not be yourself. But there is an extremely liberating point where you realize that it's not giving up, it's stopping, it's expending energy in an investment that is only taking and it's not giving anything to you. Right. And when you start shifting to investing in your tribe and what you want to do and who you are and stop distancing yourself from the society or the pockets where you're never going to win. For instance, I knew that, and I've had so many clients that have said this as well, is, you know, as a woman, because women have less privilege, a lot of times, and I think of it now in these terms, I didn't understand at the time, it was just the reaction to the society that we live in, right? Mm-hmm. Is, you know, I would always have guy friends, oh, and I'm not like those women, and I'm different than other women, and it's just like trying to align myself to something that I wasn't, and rejecting my Asianness, rejecting my femaleness, rejecting all of that. And that's so much energy to try to do. And when you start embracing that, you know what? It's like you can start living authentically who you are and it feels so much better. And you actually can have the thing that you always wanted, which was more acceptance and a better life and more abundance. Because like you said, we're not fighting for the scarcity of the patriarchal pie. We're just like, there is no patriarchal pie. Like we're aware of it, but we're making our own pie. Maybe it's a cake. Maybe it's something else.
Maybe it's just a field of endless wonder that you can follow.
Yeah, that's probably better than another pastry.
Well, it's like infinite. It's the realm of infinite possibilities, right? It's like, so if people are like, oh, well, so like right now you hear a lot of like polarization in politics, right? Because people were like, okay, I'm just going to follow the tribe and go that way, right? But like going back to our main point is like, you're freed to be authentically you, which means that you're not defensive and therefore you could be open to having the conversation and then learning. I think like the big thing that I hear from you is that it's all about pivoting and adjusting, because what we define ourselves and our identity today is going to literally rapidly change in the next second, in the next year, in the next day. So it's not designed to be this like, okay, I've opened the door and I am through and I am done. And that is the end of my milestone. No, like life is a journey and that's the beauty of it. It's about writing your own chapters. I think that's like the big thing. It's like writing your own chapters in the tone and the voice of how you want to write your life book. And every book is unique in its own way, but it's read and taken in and impacted by other people to build more conversations so that more other powerful books are being done. Like that's like how that flows. So it's not just like, go do your own thing and not care for the world. It's also about like doing your own thing so that you could serve others. There's a really good quote from Gay Hendricks. He's the writer of The Big Leap. And he says, his big phrase is like, I expand myself in abundance and love and joy and success so I can inspire others to do the same. And it's now wrapping my brain what that means. It's like you're doing all this self-work to live in your abundance so that you can inspire others so that our society, our world as a whole just lifts up. Like instead of fighting and wars and like conquest, how about lift up instead so that everybody can thrive? Yeah.
So beautifully put. And I think that, you know, when you're trying to change yourself to fit into something that isn't you, your voice is so quiet because nobody can hear you because you're just clamoring for some privilege, right? And when you start really stepping into who you are and in your power, that's when you have influence because you're never as powerful as when you are powerfully you. Because
yes.
That is exactly where that inspiration can come from. One thing that I, you know, teach my clients is represent the women of your size, represent the women of whoever you are, because that's where the inspiration comes from. It's when somebody walks into a room and they are so owning who they are, that is a kind of inspiration and that is a kind of, you know, really world-changing representation because people can see, oh, wow, they're like me and they're proud of who they are. And that's really a huge part of where this change comes from. And I think, you know, one thing that I would probably
you know, place here in this interview if you guys just wanted like one actionable thing that you could do, right? Because it's like, these are some lofty ideas and they're awesome. But if you brought back like one practical thing, I would, exposure is such a huge thing. And notice what is in your media diet. Like, what are you ingesting with, you know, movies and commercials and Instagram and whatever it is, the people in your world, the things that you are choosing to expose yourself to, do they make you feel better about who you really are or worse about who you really are? And one of those pivots is just do a little bit of a cleanse and even pick one thing to let go in your life that makes you feel bad about who you are, and add one thing about something that you can be exposed to that makes you feel better about who you are. And it's just sort of like that, those pivots where we start surrounding ourselves with the messages that actually reinforce that we are okay how we are, because you're never going to be anything else.
Right. And I would add to that is like, I love that you just like basically told them how to Marie Kondo their media consumption. That's like the, like, does it bring you joy? Does it get it out? The kind of thing.
Love That's it. Pretty awesome. Yep. Exactly.
Exactly. I love that. And then so Brene Brown in her book, Braving the World. So for those of you that don't know Brene Brown, she talks about vulnerability and leaning into yourself. And she really talks about belonging. So if you're on this journey of just like leaning into vulnerability and self-discovery, like read all her books. It's made the world, because I was like you, where, but instead of thin and like fitting into body, because I was just like, I ain't fit into any of these body things. I don't care, whatever, we'll go on. But I fit very much into like this like powerful masculine energy when I was doing like initially in the career realm. And my CEO made me read Daring Greatly, because she was like, we're going down the path that we swore that we would never do. And so I read Brene Brown, and now we have this wonderful flourishing culture that exists in our business. But she says this: true belonging is a spiritual practice of believing in belonging to yourself so deeply that you can share your most authentic self with the world and find sacredness in both being part of something and standing alone in the wilderness. So being both comfortable with belonging and shining in that room that attracts people to you, but then also being comfortable with just being in the world, like being you kind of thing. Yeah. So that's what I would like. That's, if anything, as you heard us in this conversation, the thing that we felt the most lacking was feeling of belonging. And a lot of what we've been journeying towards is this like feeling of belongingness. And if I had to say like one thing that you could do is like ask yourself, Marie Kondo media consumption, Marie Kondo how you're taking life, or thoughts and like things that run through your head, and ask yourself like, is that serving to me feeling authentically me and feeling good and feeling like I belong? Or is it setting myself up for failure? Failure is not the thing that we should fear about, but the emotional pain that, and like the guilt and the shame, is because we feel like we're not serving ourselves. So how are you serving yourself today?
Yeah, beautiful. And the cool thing is that we get to make those decisions. Like, mm-hmm. you get to decide what you ingest and endure and are exposed to, and that is 100% up to you, which is a really beautiful thing. And Roran, I just love your perspective. I just love our conversation today. And anything else that's on your mind before I wrap up, or do you feel like our conversation is complete?
I feel like it's pretty good. I just say go forth and do it. And as a Star Wars fan, may the force be with you, as the saying goes. But just like, believe, you got this. Like, there's no right or wrong answer. You do you.
That's, and it's going to be by little bits, right? It's going to be like, that's why I said just like that one thing that you're going to let go and the one thing that you're going to bring into your life. Because, you know, as we write these chapters and have this evolution in our life, it's going to be piece by piece and bit by bit. And then you get to, you know, wake up in a year and realize that all those little things have really created a more authentic you and accepting of yourself and letting go of the things that weren't your fault, because they're the world that we live in, but you don't have to, you know, be negatively impacted by them. And so,
Anyway, thank you so much, Roran, for being on. It has been so amazing. For you guys to get more of Roran's amazingness, we'll post some links in the show notes so you guys can be following her and seeing more of her. And thank you so much for being on and all of your amazing knowledge. So This is Roran and Lydia, the Lifestyle Coach, signing off. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in. If you felt a spark here and want to see how these principles can work in your own life, here is your next step. Pop over to lydialifestyle.com/session. That's lydialifestyle.com/session, where you can book a free session with our team. We'll give you a call and together find clarity on 3 things. 1, the exact cycle you keep getting sucked into. 2, what isn't working with your approach. And 3, what's missing to close the gap between food prison and food freedom. We have helped free hundreds of women all over the world from their food struggles. These are proven principles that work, no matter how long you've been stuck. This is Lydia, the Lifestyle Coach, signing off. Mwah!